Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the SNC-Lavalin Q3 2013 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Friday, November 1st, 2013, at 3:00 P.M. Eastern Time. I'll now turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin, VP of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's 2013 third quarter earnings conference call. With us today are Robert Card, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Alain-Pierre Renaud, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit yourself to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You're welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind listeners that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectation as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, which are described on slide number three and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Card.
Merci, Denis, and thank you for joining us today. Before I get into our Q3 results and strategic initiatives, I want to provide more insight into our recently revised outlook for 2013. Since I joined SNC-Lavalin, I've personally been frustrated by the surprises that we've been hit with each quarter on legacy projects. Not only have these adjustments impacted our earnings and credibility, they've also masked the significant progress we've made to strengthen our platform and position the company for future growth. With the addition of new executive talent to the firm and further evidence of weakness in our understanding of these projects, we launched a comprehensive review of our project at risk portfolio. The findings of this review led to the adjustment of our 2013 outlook. Let me reiterate my disappointment with the need for this action and the prior earnings impact the firm has experienced. However, we're confident that we have a better view of our risk exposure going forward. We continue to significantly improve risk identification, quantification, and mitigation associated with legacy projects and issues. That said, I can't yet promise that we won't encounter circumstances that may require adjustments in the future. This quarter's results are also affected by a charge associated with our review of Europe, which began early this year. As previously disclosed, we reorganized our European operations to enhance efficiency and streamline reporting structures, which are now oriented by business, not geography. As part of the reorganization, we closed certain offices in Europe and substantially reduced workforce there to eliminate duplicative operations and functions. We expect the program will affect our 2013 results by approximately 75 million. Our new global operations model, which we announced early this year, enabled this review and action. We believe this model will continue to better position us through a more coordinated approach to client management, business development, project delivery, compliance, and cost optimization. Alain-Pierre will discuss our quarterly financial results in more detail in a few minutes, but I'd like to provide a brief summary. Revenues for the nine-month period were 5.8 billion, compared to 5.7 billion for the same period in 2012. The net income loss is impacted by the cost reforecast, was reviewed by Alain-Pierre. We ended the quarter with a backlog of 9 billion. While we remain concerned about economic headwinds, we have a number of good prospects in front of us, particularly the P3 infrastructure sector, where we are currently bidding on projects having capital costs totaling nearly 10 billion and have identified several billion of additional near-term opportunities. We have made significant progress in reducing our selling, general, and administrative expenses. Q3 SG&A expenses declined by 16% versus Q3 last year. Our SG&A expenses for the first nine months of 2013 were slightly above the corresponding period in 2012. We're on a track to contain our annual expenses to our 2012 level, a significant improvement from the rapid growth in prior years. Our SG&A streamlining effort will be done in concert with improvements in client project delivery, safety, and ethics. SNC-Lavalin prides itself on the premier quality of its work, and client satisfaction is at the heart of everything we do. Even the challenging projects in our backlog that we're reforecasting are receiving the level of skill and quality that is a hallmark of S&C Lavalin. Our clients can count on us. Moving to our segment results, our oil and gas management team is now fully staffed. Terry Ivers, our new EVP Oil and Gas, brings considerable experience from companies such as Siemens and AMEC Paragon, and the application of this expertise will position us to enhance our segment performance. The business has shown increasing strength, and we have started to win significant projects spanning geographies from Western Canada, South America, and the Middle East. There's continuing softness in our mining and metals end markets. However, we see pockets of opportunity. The team has shown the ability to identify and capitalize on shifting opportunities within the sector. The fertilizer segment is relatively strong, and among many projects in this segment, we're pleased with our position in the Saskatchewan potash market. Our ability to flex with the cycles in the mining and metal sector and our market position will continue to benefit our business. In infrastructure, as I said earlier, we have several active P3 bids and have identified additional potential infrastructure opportunities. We're delighted that Dr. Ishan Mahmood assumed his newly created role of Group President Infrastructure in late October rather than January 2014 as initially announced. Ishan brings a wealth of experience with multinational engineering and construction companies, and his addition will greatly enhance our ability to achieve our potential in this segment. Our power position in the market continues to be strong, particularly in the transmission, distribution, hydro, and nuclear segments. Nuclear has had a strong year, and our outstanding safety record and expertise is a competitive advantage in this highly regulated business with significant barriers to entry. Our ICI business continues to produce outstanding results. It is a significant contributor to the strength of our earnings and, as you know, continues to be an important catalyst for engineering and construction project work. Moving forward, consistent with the strategic plan that we announced in May, we will actively manage the ICI portfolio, monetizing assets at maturity as appropriate to create value. To that end, we have entered into an agreement to sell our minority interest in the Astoria 2 power plant, recently announced a process to sell an equity stake in AltaLink, and are continuing to review the potential disposal of non-core ICI assets such as Astoria 1 and Malta Airport. Regarding AltaLink, we have engaged RBC and Morgan Stanley as financial advisors to assist in the process to unlock the value of this highly attractive asset. Not surprisingly, since the 30 September announcement, we have had a tremendous volume of inbound calls from interested parties. In mid-November, we will launch a formal process to seek proposals for the sale of 100% of AltaLink. Concurrently, we're moving forward with the work necessary to complete an initial public offering of a minority stake. We'll determine which of these alternatives to pursue as both processes evolve based on the outcome that will generate the maximum value for the company and our shareholders. We're pleased with the quality of our portfolio and will continue to evaluate how best to manage our assets to position the company to win business and deliver growth and shareholder value. On the ethics and compliance front, we now have fully initiated our compliance plan and organization and continue to make solid progress in our journey toward excellence. From the top down, we retain a continuing and relentless focus on achieving world-class performance in ethics, governance, health, and safety, as well as developing and retaining the best talent the industry has to offer. With that, I'll pass the call over to Alain Pierre to discuss our Q3 results in more detail. Alain Pierre?
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Please turn to slide 6 of the presentation. We report this morning a net loss of $73 million for the third quarter 2013, which is comprised of a loss of $108 million for our engineering and construction and operation and maintenance business, and a net income of $56 million for ITI. As you can see on this slide, the net loss is mainly attributable to a reduction in the gross margin, restructuring cost, and a goodwill impairment charge. The gross margin was impacted by unfavorable cost pre-forecast on certain unprofitable legacy fixed-price contracts in North Africa and in the infrastructure and environment segment, particularly in the hospital and road sectors. Importantly, we believe the extended evaluation and analysis of our project portfolio results in a forecast containing costs necessary to complete this project. That being said, I want to caution all of you that these are very challenging projects, but Take note that two-thirds of the project will be completed by the end of 2014, since the road project should be completed either by the end of this year or the first quarter of 2014. And our major hospitals project is expected to be completed in 2014. Most of this project continue to run at zero margins. The restructuring cost and goodwill impairment charge were due to the recent decisions and actions taken in connection with the implementation of our European reorganization. The reorganization was twofold. First, we have now closed unprofitable and non-strategic activities. Second, we have reorganized the remaining profitable and strategic activities so that they are aligned by business, not by region, and they now report directly to each segment head. This will better position us through a more coordinated approach to client management, business development, and project delivery. Still in Europe, the company incurred restructuring costs totaling $20 million, $40 million after tax, in the third quarter of 2013. These costs are mainly for severances and closures. $10 million was paid during the quarter, while $10 million was accrued, which we expect to disburse within the next 12 months. This European organization, along with a lack of profitability on certain operations and a decrease in the overall level of activity in that region, resulted in a goodwill impairment charge totaling $49 million for the quarter. We anticipate that the restructuring cost and goodwill impairment charge after taxes will total approximately $75 million and will be recognized in 2013. Now, on a more positive note, we can see on slide 6 that our revenues for the third quarter were in line with the corresponding periods of 2012, and our selling, general, and administrative expenses decreased in the quarter compared to 2012. You can also see that Highway 407 and AltaLink have both delivered very good results to date in 2013. Turning to slide 7, please. As just mentioned, our efforts to contain G&A expenses have resulted in a 16% decline to $176 million for Q3 compared to $208 million in 2012. G&A expenses for the first 9 months of 2013 are now slightly above the corresponding period in 2012, and we are on track to meet our goal of containing 2013 G&A to 2012 levels. As mentioned last quarter, we decide additional longer-term measures to manage the level of the G&A expense as well as the one of cost of sales more efficiently in subsequent years. The next slide, slide 8, presents the operating income and loss by segment. As we see, the infrastructure and environment and the oil and gas segments remain challenging. The mining and metallurgy segment continue to be affected by the softening of the commodity markets, while the power and ICI segments continue to perform very well. I will not presently go in further detail for this slide, but I would be pleased to answer any of your questions during the Q&A period of this call. Slide number 9 presents our $9 billion revenue backlog by category of activity, in which the breakdown between OEM, packages and services has remained relatively stable since the end of 2012. Services and package revenue backlog decreased from June 2013 to September 2013, mainly due to having recognized revenue on large projects in the power segment. On the other hand, for the same period, we observed the first signs of positive turnaround in oil and gas following our commercial efforts. In slide 10, we have broken out the main challenging projects that are currently in our revenue backlog. As you can see, the main challenging project on which, in most cases, we have taken unfavorable cost forecasts this quarter represent about $1.1 billion of our backlog. As I have said, most of this will be completed before the end of 2014. I remind you that most of these challenging legacy projects are running at zero margins. Slide 11 shows our financial position. Over the last 9 months, our total assets increased by $1.3 billion and now stand at 10.9. Our recourse debt to capital ratio is now 15.85. If you can now turn to slide number 12. Our cash and cash equivalents was at $798 million at the end of September 2013, in line with our June 2013 balance. Cash from operating activities was positive, $72 million for the third quarter of 2013. $388 million were used to acquire property and equipment, mainly from Altholding, with a corresponding increase in non-recourse long-term debt, which totaled for $6 million. Our cash position remains strong. We expect that a number of current projects will continue to temporarily require significant working capital, and that additional liquidity may be required to support the implementation of our strategic plan. Consequently, the company has taken immediate measures to improve the management of its working capital more efficiently and has decided, as mentioned in the second quarter, three types of action: working capital optimization, a cost-saving program, and the restructuring of our bank facility. All of these actions are progressing very well. Now, turning to slide 13. As announced on October 15, 2013, the company currently expects consolidated net income in fiscal 2013 to be in the range of $10 to $50 million. I would like to specify that the 2030 outlook assumes that the previously disclosed amount of $117 million relating to a claim in Algeria and the attempt to draw on a letter of credit in Libya, which was recognized in the second quarter, will not be reversed in 2013. Before opening the line for the Q&A, let me update you on the progress of the strategic plan to rebalance our portfolio to build value for our companies and its stakeholders. As you know, as part of this plan, we are considering the reconfiguration of our ownership in assets within our infrastructure concession investment portfolio through the sale of non-core and or mature assets, with the aim to ensure that our ICI self-finance its project. In September, as Bob reminded, we announced that we have entered into an agreement to sell 66% of our interest in Astoria 2. This process is progressing well, and we hope to conclude the transaction before year-end, but such a transaction is subject to closing conditions and regulatory approval. Also, in September, the SNC-Lavalin's Board of Directors authorized the company to initiate a process to sell an equity stake in Altholding. This asset is a very high-value asset, one of the gems of our portfolio. We love it. The company decided a dual-track process. We will launch a formal process to receive proposals for the sale of Altholding. Concurrently, we are moving forward with the work necessary to complete an initial public offering of a minority stake in Altholding. We will determine which of these alternatives to pursue based on the outcome that will generate the maximum value of our shareholders, as it has been explained by Bob Card. And as we said during our second quarter call, we are also looking to divest non-core assets such as the Astoria 1 power plant and the Mazda International Airport. This development shows that we can add significant value to assets and then either monetize or develop them to grow our ENC business while creating client and shareholder value. This concludes my part of the presentation. We can now open the line for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct a question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset for using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Yuri Link from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Hi, Yuri.
Bob, can you just provide a little more color on the change of tact in terms of the strategy for Altholding? Originally going to sell, looking to sell a minority piece, and now getting a little bit more aggressive on the sales front.
Yuri, what I'd rather do is we do have the materials coming out, but bottom line, we, as we said in our strategy in May, we want to make sure that we capture the best value for the company and shareholders. So we've been with our advisors for quite some time now, especially with the interest generated recently and we think this path forward provides us the best opportunity to realize that.
Okay. On your cash position and balance sheet, are you confident that, you know, optimizing working capital is going to be sufficient to meet the liquidity that you need for the current projects in backlog?
Yeah, at this moment, as you know, we entered into a very strong improvement of our working capital management. Accounts receivable decreased and improved. The collection date decreased also. So let's say we consider with the current cash position plus improvement in working capital, we generate sufficient cash to run our current operations.
Okay. And last one, if I can just squeeze it in. On the SG&A, I mean, a big sequential decline in SG&A. Can you just flush out if there was anything special that contributed to that, and, you know, why or why not that might not be a good run rate to go forward with?
No, you can consider that this effort will continue, and these savings are really hard savings. It means that our P&L is improving by the corresponding amount. We, as you know, and as we announced, we continue this program over 2014 and the following years, and we'll detail these action plans when we announce the yearly result.
Okay, I guess my point is...
Correct that, though, a little bit, I wouldn't count on necessarily the same quarter-over-quarter reduction. We're definitely after reducing SG&A.
Yep.
Right. If I annualize the third quarter, it's about, you know, $700 million in SG&A.
Yep.
That's 150 below 2012, and you're trying to get to 2012 levels, so I'm just trying to bridge the gap there.
Yeah, we will be there, slightly below, certainly, at your end.
Okay, maybe I'll follow up offline. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Frédéric Bastien with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Just wondering how much of your of the cost overruns that you incurred in the infrastructure division are related to Canadian projects. Based on your past contract wins, it would seem to me that the Canada would make up the lion's share, but just wanted you guys to provide more color on the losses.
Okay.
Yes, Frederic, it is the lion's share of that of those changes, absolutely.
And just to follow up on that, I mean, I guess you've taken write-offs. I think you're running with profitability of 0% margin going forward. What's your level of comfort that the losses won't reoccur as we go forward?
Let's say we enter into an extended project review. We cannot guarantee what you are asking for, but let's say based on the information we have identified, qualification of risk, we consider that we register the adequate provision at this moment.
Okay, thanks. My last question relates to the backlog. It's off, I think, $650 million sequentially. What were the main factors behind that drop in backlog? Are you being more disciplined in the way you're approaching bids, and as a result, not winning as many opportunities, or are there just less contracts being tendered right now?
Let's say in terms of backlogs first, we are adopting a more disciplined management for addressing our backlog, and we are losing the bad backlog, I would say. Our margin embedded in the backlog is still at the right level and stable compared to the past. So it means that the backlog, which are disappearing quarter by quarter for the moment, is really project below the average margin we want to generate, first point. Second point, as we mentioned, we observe a signal of a positive turnaround in certain number of segments. And third, considering the prospect in our pipes, and let's say a reasonable winning ratio in the range of 20-25%, we have no doubt that our backlog will be recovered over 2014.
Great. Thank you. I'll turn it over.
Your next question comes from Bert Powell from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Bob, just in terms of the process for AltaLink in the dual track here, can you just give us a sense or walk us through, after you make a decision to go, what the regulatory requirements will be and sort of what the timeline would be around each of these decisions? Are they an all en bloc transaction? Is that quicker or versus the public venue?
I don't want to get into too much detail. I can't recall whether we're going to include that in the materials coming out in mid-month, but we'll try to do what we can. We don't see a major timeline difference between the two. We don't see any particular obstacles, but it's hard to say. It depends on the party and other things because it is a regulatory process in Alberta, so it's up to them how long it takes. But our target is, regardless of which path we should take, somewhere in Q3 to Q4, late Q3, early Q4 next year would be a reasonable target to close the transaction.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just in terms of the liquidity for the entity, there's some discussion of looking to expand your lines of credit. I just want to make sure I understand. You have $232 million available. You have $1.9 billion in LCs out. Can you just help us understand what you think you need to get in terms of more wiggle room on that? And then the $1.9 billion, that's $1.9 billion of what? I'm just trying to figure out, is that $1.9 billion of $2 billion or $2.5 billion LC maneuvering room? Can you help us out with that?
Let's say first, as I mentioned already, our cash position is quite comfortable. If you refer to our need in terms of running operations. Second, in terms of LCs, at this moment, as you know, we are the necessary backup line of credit. We are restructuring them to enlarge our volume and the degree of commitment from banks we can get. At this moment, neither for LCs in order to support the development of our project, nor for running operation, we have special needs. We are fully covered, and we are in a very comfortable position.
But you are currently engaged with the banks in terms of expanding that availability?
We are restructuring our bank facilities with two objectives. First, as I mentioned, to secure and to commit the bank to the full line of credit first, and to enlarge the volume available, mainly in LCs, in order to support the development of our project.
Okay, and can you share with us how much extra you're looking for?
Not yet.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Your next question comes from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Can you comment, I guess, Bob, you made a comment that you went through a thorough review process and that brought the additional project write-downs in Q3. Did that review extend to projects that are in the bidding pipelines, the P3s out of the $10 billion you said are in the pipeline? Do you look at those before sort of the final awards, or is that something that's done after the fact?
We have, Sarah, we have a ongoing pretty good process that was here when I got here, but I've spent a lot of time with it on the bid review. So pretty comfortable with that, and so far we haven't seen any cracks show up in that. We do have a couple projects underway now, Ottawa and Evergreen, that went through that. The characteristic of the projects that we're bidding now are, in my mind, lower risk and better risk characterized than the previous ones. And Sarah, what really triggered this event was, as I mentioned to you all, I've been going through monthly reviews of our key projects since January, and we've just gained insights into how we can observe the risk capability of the team versus what we can now detect ourselves. And so we feel at this point more comfortable that we understand how the teams are viewing risk in their projects and have the ability to reach in and make some of our own decisions about that.
Okay, so it sounds like you've changed sort of the parameters for the risk management within the teams. Is that accurate, that they're now under different instruction, that this is the way you're going to look at risk?
Well, we are corporately looking at the risk of the backlog projects differently, and more looking at trends and what is the real capability to manage the risk, and whether all the risk is being considered, like the LC issue that we had last quarter and the hospital issue in the previous quarter were both kind of outlier things that we're now trying to incorporate into the team's basic risk observation and management strategy. And the bids going forward, and have been since I arrived, we're already considering those factors in the forward bids. So this is not intended to be a warning that we have new projects that have issues.
Okay. And then just in terms of the current backlog, given that there are a number of problem projects running at zero margin, do you still feel you can achieve a 7-10% gross margin objective on packages? And just wondered also if there's any problem service contracts in the backlog.
Well, we've tried to recognize all the risks that we feel that we can quantify at this stage. So, as both Elaine Pierre and I have said, that we can't assure that there isn't something else out there. We've taken a good shot at it in this case. And I don't see any reason why that would hinder us from getting to a normal margin level in the future.
In 2014, though?
We'll talk more about that in 2014, but certainly
okay.
that's what we're going to be trying to do. Yeah.
Okay. And then just a last question on backlog for service. What's the outlook for the pipeline for booking more service work at this point, given mining is soft?
Elaine Pierre, certainly I don't see anything particularly troubling there. But
no, I think we don't have any issue with that. As you know, we are developing first P3 because I think we are optimizing all the services and expertise we can sell. And obviously, services is under our main priorities. But let's say we don't anticipate any difficulties, neither for packages nor for services. At this moment, we are developing on these two pillars.
Although I just say to make sure that we have everything out on the table, while we see visibility for the work that could make us whole, it's something I'm spending a lot of time on. As I think I said back a year ago, I think backlog management in a company going through what we've been through is a really big deal, and we're trying to ramp up our BD capabilities. So I'm not going to declare that we don't have any focus that we need to put on that issue to make sure it happens.
I didn't understand the last point, Bob. You're putting more focus on service, or?
Well, we're putting more focus on backlog because we don't have a really robust market in many sectors. It's not a bad market, but it's not particularly one that gives away a lot. So you've got to fight for every bit of it, and we have to be geared up for it. So I guess the message is I don't want to sound too sanguine about the backlog, even though we're not worried about it at the moment.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Lechem with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Just on SG&A costs, wondering if you can give us, on the European restructuring, what the annualized cost savings from that will be going forward. And also, should we expect further restructuring cost charges through 2014 if you have further costs to come out of that organization or out of the organization?
Let's say, well, as we said, the first objectives we are now achieving is, let's say, to cap the 2013 SG&A at 2012 level, and we consider that is quasi done, and will be certainly slightly below the 2012 level, so it's a good sign. Secondly, for the future years, 2014, 15, 16, we are entering into a strong cost-saving program. It will address G&A, and it will address cost of sales. We are intending to optimize our cost basis in order to improve efficiency, effectiveness, and at the end, our competitive position.
Could you give us some examples of the kind of things that you can do to improve the efficiency? Like, how do you actually get costs out of this organization?
I'll offer one. One of the things we're really pretty enthused about is, as I said in my opening remarks, last January we announced the Global Operations Group, and that's enabling us to consolidate overhead functions outside of Canada for shared services among the various business units overseas. So we see both a significant productivity increase and a substantial amount of savings from that, and we're positioned to implement that in 2014.
And let's say beyond our quick win approach, we cover the wide range of our costs. It means we will reduce the number of companies, we will regroup people in one site, we will try to optimize all our travel cost, various, let's say, IT cost, purchasing cost, and so on. So we don't consider that one type of cost has to be protected against this cost basis optimization.
We're still in the middle of our Oracle conversion and other things, so there's pressure that ways. But I think we're planning a net reduction in the future.
On the ICIs, you focused a lot of attention on AltaLink. I was just wondering, is there any process to look at maybe getting some value out of your 407 holding, or are you enjoying the cash flows from that too much for now to let that one go at this point?
Can you repeat that? I wasn't sure I got it all.
Well, we've heard a lot about you wanting to sell either a stake or the whole of AltaLink. But 407, you've been quite quiet on the 407 in terms of monetizing that. I was just wondering, are the cash flows on that too enticing at this point to sell it, or are you considering the sale of that as well?
In our strategy, we said that our goal was to optimize our assets and eventually sell all our non-strategic assets. So probably all of our assets are going to become non-strategic at one point in time, and so it's just a question of time and right now we don't think is the right time.
Yeah, as Bob reminded, we are very clear in our strategy as regard ICR. First, we decide to restructure our ownership considering the let's say non-core assets or mature assets. What does it mean? That after completion and a certain period in time where we benefit cash flow, we will decide to sell, and it will be an ongoing and running rollover process.
Yeah, one of the things that triggered AltaLink that you all have written about is we still have a big cash flow in, and it makes less sense to put the big cash flow in if we're not generating the cash to put it in there. So that's one of the considerations why that's happening now.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Michael Tupholme from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Robert. The $10 billion opportunity pipeline you mentioned, just want to clarify a few things. Is that specifically, is that all I&E that you're referring to there?
That one did, but we have other power and other P3 type investments that we're in the bid process of right now. So, yeah, it's a very robust bid stream, and on all of them I can think of, there's only two or three bidders.
And so the opportunities in power, that's over and above the $10 billion number you mentioned.
Yeah, it's all thereabouts. $10 billion is a pretty big number, so I don't want to get into exactly nickel and diming, but $10 billion is a good number.
Okay, fair enough. So the next thing is, I was just looking for a little bit of context around how the value of that pipeline of opportunities compares to, say, what you would have been looking at, say, 6 months ago or a year ago, for example.
I think in P3 space, I believe this is the all-time record for us in terms of numbers of things going on at one time. So having only been here a year, I'm reluctant to step too deep into that question, but I've been told by our people that they've never seen anything like this. So
Okay. And it's the strength of this these opportunities that gives you confidence that the backlog, despite the recent sequential declines, should be in a position to recover?
It's certainly a big part of it because, you know, these projects, because they involve, you know, consulting, engineering, construction, O&M, and capital all at the same time, throw a lot of stuff into the backlog when you win one. We also have other big projects that are not P3 or infrastructure that we're incumbent on that are going to be rebid next year that we're reasonably confident about prevailing on that affect that as well.
Okay. And then just shifting gears, the slide 10 with the breakdown of the challenging project, just two questions. There's the other category with about $90 million of work. When is that supposed to be completed by? And then the roads and North African projects where there seems to be a bit of a potential variability in terms of how long those run, what drives the completion by the end of the year versus sometime next year?
Well, most of the the bulk of the work is already done on roads in North Africa, and Alain Pierre, I think, other as well.
Yeah, in fact, on North Africa and roads, now is really the last and ultimate checking before completion for the hospitals in Canada. For the big one, it will be end of next year. All the others are supposed to be completed, let's say, within the next 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, the reason for saying 2014 is after we've really taken a look and experienced these projects for the year, it seems like, you know, Murphy, from Murphy's Law, is deeply embedded, and so we're a little gun-shy to commit to anything until the project is killed off, and it's not going to be technically dispositioned until 2014, even though it's 99% done this year.
Okay. And then just one last clarification. So to get to the $75 million after tax of restructuring and goodwill impairment charges for the year, there's obviously some more to come in the fourth quarter. Is that all restructuring, or is there a goodwill impairment piece in that?
No, there is two categories of costs behind that. First, let's say write-off of goodwill in Europe, okay, and second, provisioning our restructuring costs in Europe. As you know, in most of European countries, you are governed by a very strict law, and you can only provision when these plans sociaux, let's call like that, are announced.
So we would see both a restructuring component and a goodwill impairment component in the fourth quarter to get you up to the full year number you've given us.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's it, thanks.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone today, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from Anthony Zika with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Robert, with reference to the competitive landscape both in Canada and abroad, could you give us some color? How does it compare to last year?
The competitive landscape in Canada, is that what you were asking about?
Yes, and then and abroad as well.
Yeah. I don't know that we see a huge difference in that. Certainly none in the core P3 mining area, power, same people, same issues. So certainly nothing that worries me about a diminution of our competitiveness, that's for sure, or a fundamental change in the landscape. I think the issue is just getting the projects on board and not having to move too far to the right. I mean, these are big projects, and they tend to have a lot of institutional challenges, and they tend to move to the right. And that's just like they didn't happen at all for that quarter. So that would be the main concern.
Yeah, except some geography where you have some, let's say, new players coming, mainly in constructions, as in Africa and Middle East, where you start to see Chinese and Korean company entering the market, but except that, the conditions are really the same everywhere.
Yeah, but even in the Middle East, we're seeing a surprising amount of unexpected new opportunities there.
Okay, good. And for Alain and Pierre, with reference to your SG&A costs, and what are some of the key challenges going forward in order to bring down those numbers? And also, how does it relate to the impact? Robert was mentioning that, you know, the prospects are the best ever, but isn't there some extra cost associated to the P3 bidding activity?
No, let's say, you know, when you enter into this kind of a profit improvement program, and you try to redesign and optimize your cost basis, is, let's say, a permanent effort and discipline. So you have to eliminate extra costs, which are certainly nice to have, but not strategically necessary. And you have to review, maybe from time to time, the efficiency of your process, of your organization, and we are currently doing so. Now, we'll try to address all categories of costs, as I said, coming from, let's say, very basic as travel cost, let's say, office, different office expenses as purpose and so on, and to go to, let's say, organization, decrease in our number of companies, for instance, to rationalize our presence in a certain number of regions and countries, to optimize organization in terms of procurement, in terms of engineering. So it's not something, let's say, which is a one shot. It's a permanent effort. We start by the beginning, i.e., to stabilize this type of expenses. I refer here to G&A. And now, once it's done, when people start the first effort, but very quickly, attitude, because I remind you that we achieved this effort over the last 4 months. So it means the group is very reactive and ready to make a strong effort, and we are very delighted by the commitments we observe to achieve this objective. And now we are entering, let's say, to continue this effort, because I think we consider it key for our competitive position, and we observe a very strong mobilization of all the team here.
And regarding BD, of course, we like the opportunity to spend BD dollars, but on the projects that I've mentioned, the BD machine is already well underway.
Okay.
On those, so it's embedded in our SG&A already.
Yeah, and for business development, certainly the category of cost will certainly optimize, will protect, because I think we need to push our commercial development yesterday.
Again, the major upside pressure is systems development and compliance.
Yeah.
Those are the things that we're working with.
But overall, Robert, it seems you're pretty bullish about next year, considering all these prospects.
I wouldn't label myself as bullish just yet. And I don't want to be negative, but I'm still waiting to see how the economy unfolds. We have a big position in the resources segment. I want to see how our clients are lining up and their capital spend. So I don't want to make any calls at this point on next year. Hopefully we're leaving you with the impression that we're looking hard at it and doing everything we can to make it bullish, but I'm not ready to pronounce that yet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Pierre Lacroix with Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Thank you. On the $10 billion capital cost that you mentioned about, obviously you probably have in there the Northwest Rail Link in Australia, which is by itself $10 billion. So can you provide a bit of, is there a lot of projects in that $10 billion, or it's one big and few smalls, or it's several projects?
The number that I have for Northwest Rail is more like three. There's about 10 projects-ish in that, plus or minus, in that list.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. Talking about the oil and gas and the new people you brought in with Neil Bruce and Terry now, I don't know, Bob, if it's possible to give us a bit of reading on how it's going there in terms of the impact of new people coming in and the impact also on your ability to attract more people in that segment, develop new contracts and new relationships.
and also exposure to, let's say, all sands like we had this week, the Fort Hills? Is it positioning you guys more closer to get involved in more closely in that type of business?
Well, I just first of all, I'm just really pleased that Neil Bruce has brought in Terry, who with Neil has brought in just an outstanding team, and we have more outstanding people in the pipeline. So really, really, really pleased. Can't say enough about that. I think, you know, the only caution I would give is that group has to replace a lot of not very good backlog with better backlog, and that's a time-consuming activity. We're definitely expecting that group to demonstrate the best results in a couple of years next year, but that isn't saying much depending on where that goes. So I don't want to manage expectations up too much other than the future. If you look at our AGM plan, focusing on oil and gas and what we said we needed to get to in the $3 billion revenue range, profitable revenue range, I think we still feel that's well within reach.
Well, in terms of the traction with people and talents, do you see guys more momentum in attracting people given the bench strength that you have built in those segments?
Oh, no question. I mean, I've been recruiting in that business for many years, and I'm really pleased with the level of talent we've been able to attract and the prospects that we still haven't announced that are in the pipeline.
Talking about that, can you provide a bit of? I think do you still have to fill up the position at the power in the power division and the ICI? Are they the segments where you want to bring new leadership? Do you have any other big guys to come to bring on board?
We have a couple positions in power that we're close on, and so that's probably our two biggest areas that we're looking for additional talent now is in infrastructure and power. We got great teams in both of them, but we think that there's a lot more opportunity there, and we've got some good candidates we're talking with.
Good, thanks. And finally, an update on the ethics aspect. Have you guys progressed in terms of the negotiation discussions with the various authorities in terms of settling on certain aspects of the wrongdoings of the past?
Well, we have. I'd say that I would rate on our side, our relationship with the counterparties is still very active and constructive. So we're pleased about that. I think what's slowing us down is the institutional complexity of the issues with our counterparties, and we're trying to help make sure that we're doing everything we can to facilitate arriving at some sort of an arrangement. So we're pleased with the process, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Good. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Yuri Link with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, just a quick follow-up on the power, the power business. It looks like, is it possible that you had only $20 million in new awards in the quarter?
Yeah,
Yuri. Okay. And so. Is there just some? I thought Muskrat Falls was kind of steady awards throughout the quarter, and as nuclear refurbishment work as well. So was this just a one-off, or is there something with that project or the refurbishment work?
I can just I'll just say that I hadn't looked into that level of detail because it must be just a timing issue around the front and back of the quarter, because there's certainly no sensation that there's an issue going on there.
Okay, that's quite possible. Second quick follow-up, Bob, what are the chances that SNC can be successful on a large sulfuric acid award in the Middle East before the end of the year?
I prefer not to comment on that.
Okay. That's it for me, guys. Thanks.
We have time for one more question, and that comes from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just on the claims from Q2, just wondered what the update is on those. I think at the time they were provisions, non-cash. When will you be able to know if you can reverse those, and will you be able to, or will you disclose that if they are reversed?
Well, I would assume, Elaine Pierre, since we disclosed the reserve, we disclosed the reversal. So yep. that's we would do that. I would say we received no negative indication over the last quarter. As we mentioned that the clients both had recanted after we disclosed second quarter, but because our test for reversal is much higher than for taking the reserve, we're not in a position to reverse.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that somewhere after the turn of the year we can get that done, and we're putting a lot of effort into it, but at this stage, it's too early to make an ironclad prediction. Lane Pierre, you want to add anything?
No, I think you're right. We are adopting a very conservative position. He's right. But we are now resuming discussions, commercial discussions with our customers, either in Algeria or Libya. So we are in a, let's say, more regular trend, but we still need to get, let's say, more firm term and condition through these discussions before taking the decision to reverse.
Yeah,
okay.
those were non-cash, and there's been no indication on the client side that they intend to.
Yeah.
They intend to follow through.
No, it's the contrary. We are more in a positive position now, but we still be very cautious concerning this, due to the environment in this country.
Okay, that's great. And just on the hospitals, I think there were some change orders that were put through. When would you be able to negotiate those for, again, a potential reversal in provision?
Well, we're continue to be in discussions. Discussions are still constructive. There's quite a large inventory of issues. There was a big inventory before those charges were recorded, as I think I mentioned in the Q1 call.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we've got a major effort underway, but I think
we can distinguish between the two categories. One, let's say, the one due to Libya is more, let's say, political than commercial. And once, let's say, the stabilization of the Libyan government and customers related to will come, certainly we could expect a kind of, quote, acceleration of these discussions. Now, in terms of Algeria, it's more commercial. Now we are, let's say, likely to complete the program. Once we'll discuss, once delivered, we start to, let's say, to continue and help to finalize discussion on term, condition, claims, and so on, and to solve all the residual issues related to this project.
I would say for sure we're not seeing any deterioration in our optimism that we'll get the job done. We're less certain on timing.
Okay. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Thank you all for having joined us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a good weekend, everyone. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.